Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, you're still not quite in the Champions League podcast dedicated to Newcastle United from the Athletic FC. I'm Taylor Payne and I'm joined by George Corkin and Chris Wolf. George, how are you doing? Are you okay?
Yes, I'm okay. I'm joining you from the sunny climes of that there London,
Ooh. Which
is no longer quite as black and white as it was 48 hours ago.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm okay. How are you, Taylor?
I'm very well, actually. Yes, good. I'm very well indeed. The sun's shining and it's put a bit of a spring in me step. That's all you need, isn't it? Chris Wolf, how are you? You all right, son?
Yeah, I'm a bit. It feels like we're almost waiting for next weekend now, doesn't it? It's sort of like I feel betwixt and between is the best way that I put it. It's just almost immediately.
All right, Kate Bush, settle down.
Yeah, exactly. Almost the after the final whistle yesterday, it's almost like, well, immediately we're now attention, just get rid of this week because attention just shifts to next Sunday. So yeah, I'm sort of in that unusual mindset of it's just everything you write and everything you speak about sort of this week, it's like with that, the caveat of, oh, well, it depends what happens on Sunday. So yeah.
It's not quite waiting for Godot, it's waiting for Alexander Isak.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's going to be a long build-up this week, chaps, isn't it? So we've got plenty to get through today, though, so let's get cracking. Arsenal 1, Newcastle United 0. Sven Botman out for the rest of the season, apparently. But no, Chris, he starts. But Alexander Isak, unfortunately, misses out.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie Howe is reliable in the sense that you know he's going to reliably try to... Is missing form probably a bit too strong, but you know that he's...
It's the word hoodwink. I like that word.
Yeah, he's so no. I mean, it was a positive that Sven Botman was fit and available, and Newcastle went with the same back three that they'd started the previous weekend, and which they'd played at the played at home against Arsenal in the second leg of the Carabao Cup. And Botman obviously had started at the Emirates in the first leg of that. That was in a four, so that was a real positive. But the negative was that Alexander Isak was out, a slight groin problem, as it was described, as we will come on to, Newcastle United's record without Alexander Isak this season and the rare occasions he hasn't played in the league is not great, and it meant that Callum Wilson made only his second league start of the year, his third in 17 months, and I think immediately that just put a bit of a deflationary effect in terms of everyone because of how important Alexander Isak is, even though he hasn't really in recent weeks been anywhere near his top form. Just, I think the sort of thought of Alexander Isak, A, gives everyone his own side a boost, all Newcastle supporters a boost as well, and I think B, makes the opposition a bit more petrified. I'm sure William Saliba in particular was absolutely delighted that there was no Alexander Isak.
Yeah, absolutely. Psychologically, it's going to give you a little bit of a lift, isn't it, knowing you're not going to have to face him. Newcastle getting another one over on Arsenal certainly has happened a few times this season, didn't it? It looked that way early on, George, didn't it? But nobody's beaten the Gunners 4 times in a season, ever. But it just wasn't to be.
I thought it was really good first half from Newcastle, in spite of the loss of Alexander Isak. Yeah, that felt like a huge blow. It was, can they really do it this time? But they created loads and loads of chances, and some really good saves from David Raya. But you know, as those chances are going by and they're not being taken, you're kind of wondering whether that would be the story of the day. And ultimately, it was. I mean, I thought that, you know, Newcastle, albeit, you know, not having more of the ball than Arsenal, they just had the impetus, they had the urgency. I thought Arsenal started really poorly, considering it was their final home game of the season and they still had second place to try and nail down. And they were there, you know, they were there to be beaten, I think. And it wouldn't have been a travesty or an injustice if Newcastle had been 1-0, 2-0 up at half time. The fact that they weren't just left them open to what happened next, which was, you know, Arsenal certainly responding. They were much, much better in the second half, and Newcastle just couldn't keep up that level of intensity and, you know, just didn't have game changers to come on and win it for them. So I think it has to go down as a big opportunity missed, I think.
As George said, Chris, there were chances in that first half, weren't there? And if you miss your chances against quality opposition like Arsenal, you're going to get punished, aren't you, eventually?
It wasn't even just the first. I thought the first 20 minutes in particular, I mean, Newcastle were almost... It may have been that Arsenal had all the possession, but Newcastle were sort of bombarding their box and were the ones who looked far more penetrating. And it was... It was the willingness they had of players to progress through the lanes, to either carry the ball or pass it through the line, and it just caused Arsenal all sort of problems. And I mean, by half time, Newcastle's XG was 1.46 and Arsenal's was 0.33, and they had double Arsenal shots, 10-5. They'd had 5 on target as well. I mean, David Raya with his feet was pretty ordinary. In fact, he kept on creating Newcastle's opportunities by kicking the ball to them. But then with his hands, he was the one who kept denying Newcastle. And I mean, Bruno Guimaraes had a very good opportunity, which he probably put too close to Raya, really, which Raya tipped wide. The Burn had a chance. Botman had a chance. Harvey Barnes had opportunities. And it was frustrating. And he did feel that if Isak had been on the pitch, that he may have taken one of those chances or maybe moved defenders further out of the way so that somebody else could have had them. Because the one frustration was that of all of the opportunities that did fall, none of them fell to Callum Wilson, which I think is, you could say, is partly down to him, partly down to his teammates as well. But he was on the pitch the entire match for the first hour or so, and didn't actually have a shot on goal. None of those 10 shots in the first half fell to Newcastle's centre forward, and that is a frustration because he's the one who he would have backed to finish them, really.
And Eddie Howe was not best pleased with the opening to the second period, George, was he? The first 10 minutes in particular was difficult watch, wasn't it?
Half time in that sense wasn't great timing for them. You know, there was a bit of that sort of taking their foot off the gas, I think, probably. But also, Arsenal couldn't have been as bad as they were in the first half. They changed things around at half time. They switched formations around and they just looked much more effective. And I think partially the way they had played in the first half was down to Newcastle's energy and urgency, but they'd also been poor. And that wasn't going to last. And it didn't. They changed things around. They were able to sort of change personnel and system in a way that Newcastle just couldn't do. You know, Newcastle really didn't have game changers on the bench. We saw kind of Asula come on. We saw Lewis Miley come on. We saw Emil Kraft come on. But with the greatest will in the world, they aren't proven Premier League game changers, are they? That's just not what their roles are, what their positions are.
I very much enjoyed the introduction of Emil Kraft, who walked on the pitch and instantly got a yellow card about 10 seconds later.
That must be one of the quickest.
Go on, son, make a difference.
This season. Yeah, well, he did. Yeah, he did.
There was one real moment of quality, Chris, wasn't there, from Declan Rice? A lovely strike in at the corner. There's not an awful lot you can do about that, really. I mean, Anthony Gordon does give the ball away, gets his pocket picked, and that's something that we need to look at. But it's a great strike from Rice.
It was a great strike. I mean, I have to make an admission here, and that the general WAF family curse that tends to happen when we say things during a match which sort of turn out to not prove to be the way that you would want, is that on The Athletic, we did the briefing immediately afterwards, and I'm sort of messaging my editors and the other people who are contributing to it, and about two-thirds of the way through the first half, I basically messaged and said, Declan Rice has done nothing against Newcastle in any of the matches this season. And at one stage, there was a provisional bit that was going to be done on how Declan Rice has been bullied by Newcastle's midfield in basically every single game. And then Declan Rice pops up with... I mean, I'll be honest, I thought first half that was true. And I think even in the second half, Newcastle largely got the better of Declan Rice, but he produces an absolutely wonderful finish, and that was really, even though Arsenal were much improved in the second half and Newcastle really sat off and didn't have a shot between, I think it was the 35th and 70th minute, something like that, I didn't think Arsenal were exactly peppering Newcastle's goal. It wasn't like Pope had made loads of saves. He made the save from the set piece in the first half where he tipped it over the bar with a really good save, but Arsenal, as much as they improved, still didn't really look like breaking Newcastle down. And it took a moment of real quality like that to really open them up, even if It was a frustrating loss of the ball by Anthony Gordon, who had a difficult afternoon, certainly difficult second half for Newcastle. But I, as negative as it seems in the end that they lost, I do think that the fact that they've restricted Arsenal, I think it was Arsenal's 53rd shot across four matches this season when they finally scored against Newcastle, because Newcastle kept three clean sheets in the previous matches. Also, what was interesting was Gary Neville on commentary on Sky was pointing out that during the first half, Newcastle were basically seeing Arsenal take short corners and weren't sending anyone out from the centre of the... They basically had everyone within their own 18-yard box and were basically saying, Arsenal, you pass it short if you want to because we know we'll be able to deal with that. And it was the only real dangerous set piece that they had was the one that they did whip in from Saka, which was put over the bar by Nick Pope. So Newcastle had a game plan again, and I think largely defensively it worked. Offensively it worked for the first 45 minutes, but then they sort of lost their way, and they have had a habit of doing that in the second half of matches recently, or starting second half poorly, and they got punished on this occasion against a side who really, if you play them four times across the course of the season, given the quality of Arsenal, yes, for Newcastle to restrict them as much as they have, I still think it's impressive.
There was one of those short corners that Arsenal took that actually ended up back with their keeper, back with Raya. And, you know, I do think that Newcastle's game plan was very good. It is very simplistic to say this, but to come back to the start, if Alexander Isak had been on the pitch, even a half-fit Alexander Isak, I'm just sure he would have taken one of those chances. And, yeah, I mean, Chris, you're right to kind of mention that overall record against Arsenal this season. It's been incredible. It's been extraordinary. And I think if you put that first half performance into the mix with those other three games, Newcastle have played really, really well against them. I don't think there was a lot wrong with Newcastle's performance. Yes, the second half wasn't great, but they could and arguably should have had the game won by then. It does go down as an opportunity missed because of all those chances. But, I do think Eddie Howe is right at the end of that to say, yeah, disappointed and frustrated with the result. But it's more positives than negatives to take from that performance. And ultimately, it leaves Newcastle in the same position as they were before kickoff.
Newcastle have been a bit of a thorn in the side of Arsenal this season, Chris, haven't they? And apparently Declan Rice said Arteta told the Arsenal players to take previous Newcastle results personally, giving them a little bit of a boost going into the game.
Yeah, I mean, as we know, Newcastle and Eddie Howe are very much implanted inside Mikel Arteta's consciousness. So
rent free, I believe, as well.
Exactly,
is the term we use.
But no, and that's understandable. I mean, Arsenal, they haven't had many defeats across the course of the season, and yet three of those have been at the hands of Newcastle as well. And it has felt, and it did feel even for the first 45 minutes of yesterday, that this Arsenal side struggles to find a way to break Newcastle down, and that Newcastle do have the ability to cause them problems. And so, yeah, I understand that for them, this psychologically was a big win. It was also a big win for them in the sense that it now looks almost certain that they're going to finish second, which had seemed dicey, and even their Champions League position was no longer certain until they won this match. So it was, for them, I think this was almost like their one big push at the end of the season. Newcastle went there, tried to get the job done, couldn't, and now they have to get the job done next weekend.
Yes, and this leaves the league table very interesting going into the final day, George, doesn't it? And Declan Rice did actually say as well that it was a very evenly matched game. It could have gone either way. Newcastle could easily be sitting second in the league.
Yeah, I mean, and if that was Arsenal going out to sort of show that they were taking previous results personally, I don't think they did a very good job of it. I mean, you know, yes, ultimately they won, and it was a big moment for them, but you know, the way they started the game I thought was pretty pathetic. I didn't think they were kind of up for it at all, but they win, fair play to them. And yeah, it means, as Eddie Howe has said all along for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, it all comes down to the last game of the season at home to Everton. Feels very, very fitting it should this season, which has been an epic right from the start. Depends on how long you want, how far back you want to go, but all the way back to the last summer when, you know, Newcastle was a very different place, bit edgy, bit tense, lots of stuff going on off the pitch. But here they are, one game away from the Champions League. So, yeah, make a very exciting, nerve-wracking ending. But, you know, to be in this position, fighting for something as great as this on the last day, that is, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Definitely. Right then, chaps, let's move on. I'll be back in just a moment.
I'd eat orchid.
So who's your favourite Newcastle player? It's a hot competition these days, but there'll be quite a few votes for our transcendent Cheshire Cat on the right wing. George has had an extended sit-down with the Premier League's most prolific assister. That's Egyptians not included, obviously. Is he, George, as delightful as we all imagine him to be?
Yeah, he's great. I mean, this has been a sort of interview 3 years in the making, really. It's something I've wanted to do for a long time. And finally, Jacob agreed with Newcastle, and I'm just so chuffed about it. I wanted to tell his story for a long time. We went along to George Stevenson High School in Killingworth, not too far away from the Newcastle training ground, where the club's charitable foundation has a permanent presence. They do loads of great work there with the kids. And what Jacob wanted to do was to do a Q&A with some of the girls there. He wanted to do that because he's got a young daughter of his own, Quinn. And he kind of wanted to make a fuss about girls' football because, you know, that's something that he would obviously like Quinn to be involved with if that's what she'd like. And we talked about his career at length, doing the hard yards, proving himself, improving himself at Newcastle, dealing with criticism. He used the phrase callousing my mind, which I really love.
I like that.
And how he's become a thinker and a reader, that this is just kind of the start for him. And, of course, all of those memeable moments, which we all know and love. So that interview will be on The Athletic later this week. I'd love you to all read it. But, yeah, also recorded it and got some nice bits of audio for you as well. And for a bit of kind of light relief at the start of the chat, I asked him if he, having finally won a trophy for the club, if he feels like a Newcastle legend.
No, but I'm okay with that. Like, I'm at peace with myself. I know everything that I offer. It's not for me to decide if I'm a legend or not. It's for other people to come up with that. So, yeah, I'm just happy to go along doing my business, and where we land is where we land.
And again, this is a silly question. Have you talked at all? Have you thought about what your statue might look like?
No. I'm usually more just thinking about, wow, where's Alex? And I pass it to him.
All right. So I do think what happened at Wembley was life-changing. I think it's changed my life. I've written about the club for 30 years. And as a Newcastle fan, I'd long since given up on the idea of winning something. And it's happened. And I do think, like, when I think about my own life, whether it's getting married, there are certain things that happen that when you look in the mirror the next day, you do think, this is a bit different, maybe having a child as well. Did it feel like that at all?
No, that whole couple of days, it felt like this was meant to happen for us. Like, it's just very organic, and we've had the experience of losing. And a lot of my career has been about having different challenging experiences, learning from them, and using that information for the betterment. And I think everyone was just ready. Someone texted me before the game saying, it's already 1-0. I was like, what do you mean? He was like, the fans have outsung all of the Liverpool fans.
You'll never walk alone.
Yeah, it's already 1-0 to Newcastle. So when he said that, I was like, oh, yeah. And, yeah, the whole hotel the night before, the day of, everything just felt different, like, not scary, like, almost belonging. And then it was just to go out there and show that. And, like, yeah, we do turn up for them big moments. And, you know, don't think the question's ever asked about us when we're at home and stuff like that. When it's like a big team coming to us, like, they kind of know that we're going to turn up. And yeah, it was kind of that case on the day. And as soon as we started, like, you could just tell, and it was like, okay, when are we going to get that goal? And then it was very fitting that it was Dan to get it after the week that he had, after the season that he's had. And then once we got that right in the stroke of halftime, I was like, yeah, like, even if we have to shit house it to, like, the fall of the full second half, like, we're going to do it. And then, yeah, to come up with a header then for Alex, which even when the ball come in, like, I don't know what I was thinking to go for it, because usually I would have, like, judged it, like, oh, can I make it? Then something was like, nah, jump for it. And yeah, got the contact, and then Alex sweeps it in. So yeah, it was just a whole load of things just coming together, kind of the universe putting it out there, like, yeah, this is for you guys today.
So you don't feel different after winning something, or winning something for your club that hasn't won something for so long?
I feel that it'll be once I finish playing.
Yeah.
Obviously, I understand how big it is, that it is a big deal. But because that game was in, when was it, March, February? So when it was, but then we still had loads to concentrate on. Yeah. Everyone keeps asking, are you excited? Are you excited? Yeah, I'm excited, but
I can't think
about it. I tried to think about it, but like, there's always so much going on with football. You know, you're always just thinking, I'm only thinking to the next day. So yeah,
it's interesting because I'd never thought of what happens after winning something. That to me had always been the full stop. And it's like, of course, football goes on, but like, if you'd honestly got pissed and stayed pissed for the rest of the season and lost every other game, I wouldn't have cared. Because the only thing that I'd thought about. Yeah. And, you know, part of what is so impressive about this team is that it's just like carried on, and if anything, got sort of better.
Yeah. Well, what I've always loved about this group is we just fly along steady.
Yeah.
Like, we're never low and we're never high. We're kind of just bubbling away in the middle.
Yeah.
And that's weird, because I know, you know, everyone's talking about being more mindful these days and live in the moment and enjoy things and stuff. But yeah, you enjoy it for a moment, but then it's like we're then on to the next thing. And that just seems to go from 1 to 25. Everyone's kind of that mindset, but it's nice. Like,
it's weird for this club, particularly, which is often felt unhinged.
I don't know, I think that's just the change in the elite behaviour, just the quality of players. Even like if you ask me 10 years ago, like, what it'd be like to win a trophy, you'd be like, yeah, it's everything. And you'd be happy with just winning the one. And then when you win the one, then you're like you can see why so many of like the greats, they're always chasing the next one. And I'm not saying I'm going to be a serial winner, but now I get why they're like that, because you do say some of the household names who could have gone away and chased money. They don't. They just stay where they are and then try and win again. And yeah, just winning is so good when you used to lose more often than not.
Yeah. So. And the Champions League, obviously it's a huge, huge draw. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because the way the team's gone about it, chasing it down, has been so impressive. Why is it so important to get back there as a player, as a Newcastle player?
Because it's like, it's the elite. So creating like iconic games and iconic moments, a lot of stuff that we relive through huge spectacles like that. That PSG game, that will forever be documented for Newcastle forever.
Yeah.
And to be involved in their moments is epic. Newcastle social media always puts up Papi Cisse's goal against Chelsea like once a month. Do you know what I mean? And everyone still loves it. I think that's what everyone wants, to be involved in them kind of special moments. But we want to test ourselves. We think we're ready to compete. But you can only go into these places by earning the right. And yeah, that's what kind of, we go out there, we earn the right to win, and we want to earn the right to be in the Champions League, and it's just cool, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've made this point before on the pod a few times. I mean, I'm just sort of so impressed with this team, the way that they've responded to winning something, that, you know, if anything, it's inspired them even further to kind of keep on winning. I mean, you know, I wouldn't have cared if they'd gone on the beach, you know, and done that. I don't know how you two feel, but I do just think that is that is the club and the team that this Newcastle have become. It's just so admirable the way they've taken it up another gear.
I think the thing that strikes me the most, and it's something which you don't always get with Premier League football teams, is that they just seem like a really lovely bunch of lads, don't they? And Jacob is the absolute epitome of that. He seems like a really smashing lad who's got his head screwed on, very humble, and you want him to do well, don't you? You're just willing him to do well and to get better. And I remember a few years ago when it looked like his time at Newcastle was up. It looked like, you know, he did get grief off fans. He got, you know, every week you would hear that he wasn't good enough or we paid too much money for him, all this sort of stuff. It absolutely warms my heart that he's been involved in all of this. And I think it's brilliant. And I'm so, so chuffed for him. I'm so pleased for him.
No, I 100% agree with that. And I also think that, like Dan Burney, sort of mirrors that story of someone who's just kept pushing on, kept persevering, kept believing that he will get to the top and he will reach the top and risen to sort of all of those challenges. I didn't believe that he could reach these levels. I don't think I'm wrong to say that most Newcastle fans didn't either, but he's proven every single one of us wrong. He is now rightly mentioned alongside Mo Salah and Alexander Isak in terms of the most goal contributions since the start of December and the like, and he still can produce those moments that can infuriate you within a game. But then he provides a cross or a shot which completely changes it. Game-changing moments. It's not just that he makes a pass. He actually provides those game-changing moments, and it's been an absolutely wonderful season for him.
I think it's an important lesson for all of us. You know, it's like you see the kind of shiny new signings who arrive for, you know, for big money, and you kind of think that's where Newcastle are headed. That's, you know, that's their future. And we've been kind of very quick to kind of cast aside the players who've helped Newcastle get to this point. You know, I think one of the great things about Jacob and Dan, as you mentioned, Chris, is that they've shown that there's another way to the top. There's another route to the top. And in both of their cases, it's been very mazy. You know, Jacob's had something like 10 clubs. As a kid, when he was at Norwich and he was in the England under-21s, you know, it was like, I think probably, you know, a pretty sort of exciting future was mapped out for him. And it's taken him a lot of hard work to get there. But this is the definitive, you know, this season is the definitive proof that he's good enough and that Dan's good enough. And as you said, Taylor, I'm just sort of, you know, I'm delighted that it's been this team this season that have done it. Anyway, that's, you know, that thing about responding to criticism and dealing with it is something that I've written about a lot in this piece. And, you know, we may indeed play more of the interview over the coming weeks and months. But the other thing that felt very timely or very important to kind of talk about right now is England. It's something that he is very keen to do. He's seen Dan do it himself immediately after Wembley. And it's something that Jacob is very hungry for himself too. And, you know, our understanding is that he's certainly being talked about within the England squad. He's in the frame. He's on the long list for the squad that is announced at the end of this week. That's our understanding. And fingers crossed he gets a call up. And it's something that, yeah, we chatted about here too.
Let's talk about England then. It feels like a no-brainer to me. But
thanks. Can you speak to them?
I will. I mean, so, you know, one lovely little thing which I'd forgotten about was that you grew up in the shadow of Wembley, as you would say. What would it mean to play for England?
I mean, you play in the garden and you're like, oh, yeah, one day that'd be good to do that. But then had little taste of them playing at Wembley when I remember skinny me in my blue kit for Newcastle and we played Spurs at Wembley.
Oh, yeah.
And I should have scored in that, actually. Come in and had the angle on my side and, you know, hit it over the bar. But then as you start getting older and you start seeing all the players and what it's like, then, like, it isn't really a dream anymore. It's kind of like, England is what it is. Like, that's the national team. I'm really far away from it. But, you know, I would hope that, yeah, that they're potentially casting an eye out on what I'm doing, because I feel my game would be appreciated in the setup. I'm a different profile to every other winger in the league. Other than me, Brennan Johnson's the only other right-footed right winger. Brings a whole different dynamic. This Harry Kane, Ollie Watkins, I'd love nothing more than to be putting it in dangerous areas for them to get onto the end of. And then, yeah, also off the ball. And, you know, I just think there's a lot of attributes which I think would would complement the team, and I'd love to be able to showcase them.
I would love to see him pull that England shirt on. I think it would be brilliant. It would be just a perfect way to top off the season, an absolutely unbelievable season for him. And back to where we started, whether he thinks so or not, Chris, Jacob Murphy is a Newcastle legend, isn't he? He has to be.
Yeah, well, every single member of that side is a Newcastle legend. They're the first Newcastle players since 1969 to win silverware of any form, the first since 1955 to win a domestic trophy. And not only that, he's also a boyhood Newcastle United fan, and so that makes it even more special, just as it does with Dan Byrne. And so, yes, very much a legend. All of them are in the history of the cup, and they will forever be immortalised with connection with that cup.
What I love about Jacob too is this sense that, you know, there's a kind of Murphy family motto, which whenever anything kind of good happens, whenever they achieve anything, they say to each other, you know, this is just the start. What's next? And obviously we know about Josh Jacobs' twin playing really well this season at Portsmouth alongside Matt Ritchie, who I think is probably suffering from double vision a little
How many times do you think he's called him Jacob this year? How many times?
I'd have thought a few times, yeah. But, you know, so like Jacob, you know, I think part of this thing of like saying, does he think of himself as a legend? It's like, well, no, he's thinking about what's next and he's not finished. You know, he's not taking this as a full stop. It's about what can he win next. It's about England. It's about the Champions League, fingers crossed, next season. And I just love his attitude. He's a great fella. He's been a great part of the team. He's very funny. He represents, you know, all the good stuff about this Newcastle United. And, yeah, fingers crossed he's in that England squad.
Yes, I'm sure there's more to come from Jacob Murphy, and we've got more to come from the lads on The Athletic as well. Lots of exciting stuff on the horizon, some of which you'll get sneak previews of and extra bits via the podcast, George. Isn't that right? What we got on the horizon?
Yeah, we've got some exciting stuff coming your way soon. We have a big deep dive into the Newcastle United Academy, which is exciting. That's something Chris and I are doing at the minute, which, again, will be written piece, but also an audio piece. And Chris, kind of on that subject, has written a great piece last week about Sean Neave, who, of course, we'll all have seen has been on the bench recently for Newcastle, has a League Cup winners medal, but he has yet to make a first team appearance, which is a kind of really kind of quirky, interesting story. They've got, you know, they've got high hopes for him at the academy. Chris spoke to a lot of people there, part of his background, and yeah, so lots more to come.
An exciting times ahead for Newcastle United women's team as well, Chris.
Yes, so Newcastle United women's team, obviously, as we know, back-to-back promotions, their first ever season in the Championship. They were targeting triple promotion, or at least said that they would like to get that. Ended up finishing fifth, but already we've spoken the last few weeks about some of the players who are leaving after a long period at the club as they look to kick on and try and get up to the WSL and try and compete in the WSL, as we know is the long-term goal. And so myself and Matt Woosnam, our Crystal Palace reporter, have reported today that they are set to appoint Grace Williams as their new director of women's football. So she joined Crystal Palace 2 years ago, and in her first season as the director of women's football there, it was a slightly different title, I think it was head of women's football, they oversaw Palace winning the Championship and going up to the WSL. Then this season, Palace have been relegated back again. They will be back in the Championship, but they have been unfortunate in terms of injuries. She also previously was at Bristol City. She's worked for the Welsh FA as the Women's League and Club Development Manager, and also Watford as the General Manager. So Paul Mitchell, although we obviously primarily associate him with the men's side and, you know, the summer transfer window that is upcoming, he has also shown a heck of a lot of interest in the women's setup, as there was before. The Newcastle obviously have poured in significant resources. Previously, it was obviously Amanda Staveley who led a lot of that, and Dan Ashworth before they both left. And Paul Mitchell's come in, and Becky Langley's spoken regularly about their relationship. And so he has overseen the appointment of Williams as director of women's football going forward. It'll be interesting to see which changes she can make as I say, the women's side do and the lasses do target promotion going forward to the WSL.
This new appointment will effectively replace Sue Cumming, and I think at this point it's absolutely right to pay tribute to Sue's involvement, not only with Newcastle United, but also for the women's game in general in the Northeast. She's been a hugely influential figure about the development of girls and women's football in the region over decades now. And of course, at Newcastle, she's overseen these two promotions up into the Championship, the, you know, huge changes at the club, going full-time professional. And Sue, you know, will now be stepping back. I'm delighted that to say that she'll still have a consultant role at the club. And yeah, so I have to say, you know, huge congratulations and well done to Sue for everything that she's done. But yeah, it continues to be an era of transformation and change with the women's team.
Right then, chaps, let's have a quick break and we'll be back to preview Super Nervous Sunday in a couple of moments.
Come on, you Maggies.
Right then, strap yourselves in. It's the last game of the 24-25 season. It's Super Nervous Sunday.
Is that a song? Super Nervous Sunday sounds like it should be
Super
a song.
Super Nervous Sunday?
Yeah, it sounds like it should be. It
should be a song, yeah. Yes, Fulham, Man City, Man United, Aston Villa, Newcastle play Everton, of course, and Nottingham Forest v Chelsea. Before that, we've got Man City v Bournemouth on Tuesday as well. 1 point separating third and seventh, and by 6 o'clock on Sunday night, George, it could all look very different, couldn't it?
Well, we hope not.
Well, we certainly do hope not.
But, I mean, it could. I mean, that's the beauty of football.
Potentially, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it is. It's just ridiculously tight. It's the only thing still to be decided in the Premier League, so, of course, it has to go to sort of hype overdrive at this point.
Yes.
But, you know, Newcastle are in a strong position. As things stand, they're third. They may not be third after the Man City game. You know, we'll have to wait and see. They're at home. You know, they're playing a team. I'm going to contradict myself in a little bit and talk about why Everton should certainly be respected in this match. They're not going to be swept away, I don't think. But Newcastle are ending with a home game. They've had an absolutely incredible season, a transformative season, and it's in their hands. That is the position I think anybody would have taken at the start of the season, to be within a great shout of qualifying for the Champions League.
City v Bournemouth on Tuesday night, Chris, could be interesting as well, couldn't it? City obviously lost the cup final to Palace. We've got to say congratulations to them. And Bournemouth are in the middle of scrapping with Fulham, Brighton and Brentford for a European spot as well. It's potentially tasty, that game.
Yeah, so 8th place could still be a UEFA Conference League spot. It's quite complicated about how it all sort of works. But yeah, be interesting to see what happens with Man City. Because if Man City do win, they are currently a point behind Newcastle. But if they draw against Bournemouth or beat Bournemouth, they will then go up from 6th to 3rd and Newcastle would drop down 2-4th because of their Man City have a superior goal difference. Yeah. But no, Bournemouth will be a very difficult opponent. And it's right. So the situation for Newcastle essentially now is if they win, they are all but guaranteed Champions League football unless Aston Villa or Chelsea manage to create the most. Well, basically, I think it has to be Aston Villa has to win by a ludicrous margin more than Newcastle do. So basically, a win guarantees that. They are nearly guaranteed already a Europa League spot, because although they've got a Conference League spot from the fact that they won the Carabao Cup.
Can you be nearly guaranteed something?
Because it would be a very unlikely set of results that would deny them. Because Chelsea and Forest play each other on the final day, what for Newcastle to be denied 6th place and to finish 7th would require Forest to win probably 1-0 and Newcastle to lose by a margin of, I think it's 4-0 or more against Everton. So it's highly unlikely that scenario happens. So that basically you're looking that Newcastle will likely finish somewhere between 3rd and 6th is essentially where we're at right now. But it is quite complicated.
It's massively complicated, isn't it? A win against Everton, like we say, basically guarantees that Champions League spot. The goal difference has been a big issue, hasn't it? This is the thing. We've put some good numbers on the board and we've scored a lot of goals, and at this point it's helping us out massively, but you just don't know what's going to happen, do you, George?
And this is why, you know, this is why I'm sure everybody will be hoping and praying that Isak is back for Everton. That would be a big relief. I'm sure they'll be wrapping him up in cotton wool in a desperate attempt to get him back on the pitch. This obviously was something that I had to ask Eddie Howe about after Arsenal, which I did, and also kind of for an update on the squad's mood leading into this match.
Yeah, he only felt pain really after training. He felt fine during training, and then just a bit of stiffness really. So he went for a scan this morning really purely as a precaution. But then it became obvious he wasn't going to be fit to play. I think a lot will depend on how he reacts in the next few days. My mood is always the same after we lose. I'm disappointed, I'm frustrated, and it takes me time to sort of get out of that way of thinking. I will look back with positivity from the game, though I know I will, because there was so much good to take from it. Yeah, I think when you then look on to the next game, and we know what we have to do, and it's not going to be easy, but our home form has been strong. We've really enjoyed playing there. The players are used to big games. There'll be none bigger than this, and I'm sure the Newcastle supporters will make it an unbelievable atmosphere for us.
Yes, so Chris, Anthony Gordon to start, do we think? Maybe he's looked a little bit unsure and a little bit tentative since coming back, hasn't he? Is he maybe struggling to find his rhythm?
Yeah, I think that's a fair evaluation of how he's playing. I got the impression, and I don't know if this was the reason why he was left on the pitch against Arsenal, but that it was almost to try and get football in his legs, because I think if you're going to go for actual performance-wise, I thought Murphy was unlucky as the... I know he's playing as a wing-back, but when the formation shifted to be the 4-3-3, he was the player first withdrawn.
Yeah.
Then it was Barnes, who didn't have a great afternoon either, but I thought that for Gordon to stay on as long as he did felt like trying to get football into his legs. I mean, he has been a player for the big occasion. My concern, I suppose, for Sunday is obviously what happened at Goodison Park and whether that game got into his head early in the season when Newcastle failed to win a game when they absolutely dominated it, and obviously it's his former club. So that would be my one concern. But I do suspect that Anthony Gordon will start. If Isak's fit, that makes things slightly more complicated. I would suspect Newcastle revert to a 4-3-3. Don't think that they'd be needing the three centre-backs at home against Everton. And then if Isak is fit, then it's who of the two wide players retain their position, and in which case then maybe Gordon doesn't start. So I'm talking myself round to the other way now. So
I do think that's interesting, because I think it becomes a bit of a system question, doesn't it? I mean, yeah, they've played three centre halves against both Chelsea and Arsenal, but Everton is a slightly different proposition. That this is a game you would expect. I mean, that, you know, you expect that Newcastle will be spending most of the time attempting to break down a team who will be very keen not to be broken down, as opposed to, you know, Newcastle playing on their counter attack. So it's going to be a different sort of challenge. In top form, with all things being equal, that is absolutely made for Anthony Gordon, but he's not been on top form, he's not been at full fitness, and Harvey Barnes has done very well. And that thing of playing, you know, Barnes on one side, you know, kind of Gordon on the other, doesn't really work in the same way. So I do think that becomes an interesting, you know, an interesting selection for Eddie Howe.
We mentioned him briefly last week as well, Chris, didn't we? But Jamal Lascelles has been gradually returning to football, and he's never really been away, not literally, but he's an important figure behind the scenes, isn't he?
Yeah, and on a personal level, I was absolutely delighted that Jamal Lascelles is back involved. He's quite emotional about he did an interview with the club's website after he played 45 minutes for Newcastle under-21s against Celtic under-21s last week. I'd actually bumped into him very briefly at Newcastle's training ground earlier that week, because there's the piece George mentioned about the sort of behind the scenes at the academy, because he had been training with him in the build up to that game, and just to see him back and see him involved, and everyone was who dealt with him and the academy side was sort of waxing lyrical about how much of a professional he is, how much he'd helped those other lads. I was only briefly down there as well, but he's had a difficult time returning. Howe spoke last week about Jamal Lascelles relative to Sven Botman. People compare them and say he had ACLs at almost exactly the same time. Why did Botman return basically at the turn of the year, and it's taken 14 months essentially for Jamal Lascelles? And it's because no two ACL injuries are the same, and also there were a couple of setbacks here and there, but Lascelles has been a true professional, and he remains an influential voice behind the scenes. And I think having his leadership there and having him back in and around the squad is important at this time. And I'm just really pleased, as I say, for him on a personal level. He's got another year at Newcastle, as we reported a few weeks ago, that he has another year on his deal. So it looks like he's going to be around going into next season. But so hopefully he can have a full pre-season behind him, and just, yeah, it gives an added bit of depth when Newcastle are starting to lose players in other positions.
It's very, very good to see him back. A huge game then, George, and it'll be a riotous atmosphere, hopefully minus an actual riot. And St James's Park always brings it, as this team does now as well. No pessimism, but George, you want to sound a note of caution, don't you?
Is it a note of caution, or is it just, yeah, to reiterate that St James's has to be like that? I mean, you know, we were wondering before the early kickoff against Chelsea whether you know, fans would turn up. It was such a kind of awkward time for the game to start, and they did. It was brilliant. You know, it was absolutely fantastic atmosphere. It definitely needs to be that again this Sunday. I don't have any fear in that regard, but it's going to be a different game, and I do think it'll be a difficult game. And the reason I'm sounding that note of caution is because I wrote about Everton not too long ago, and you know, you just have to look at the league table. Since David Moyes was reappointed as their manager on January the 11th, they've only lost four games in the Premier League, and those games were against Villa, Liverpool, Man City and Chelsea. And in that time, they've won four times away from home at Brighton, Palace, Forest and somewhere else that I can't remember. I was doing really well until that point.
I really enjoyed that. That was
yeah.
Great.
That was like reality coming crashing back in on me, wasn't it? I was doing so well. I sounded so authoritative.
You should have just kept going there. You'd have been fine.
I should have just named anybody. I should have just named anybody. And I can't read my own fucking handwriting. It's Fulham. Fulham,
there we go.
And they've drawn against Liverpool and Arsenal. And away from home in the Premier League this season, they have only scored 15 goals, which is pretty terrible. I think only Southampton have scored less, but they've only conceded 21, and only Arsenal have conceded less. So, you know, they don't score many goals, but they don't concede many goals. And their number of away defeats is 7, which happens to be the same number as Newcastle, and one fewer than Aston Villa. So the point I'm trying to make is, this is not a game for the faint-hearted. Yes, they've just had this very, very emotional goodbye to Goodison Park, but they definitively haven't been on the beach so far. And yeah, maybe that changes a bit after that game, who knows. But I just think this is a really awkward game for Newcastle against opponents who love making things difficult for you. So I do think it requires noise, it requires patience, and it means that the crowd will have to stay with the team. I mean, I hope all of this is a load of bollocks and Newcastle score two very early goals, but if they don't, you know, I think it has the hallmarks of it could be a nervous afternoon, it could be a long afternoon, so let's make it as loud and as intimidating as possible.
Just on the sort of atmosphere and the way it was built up for the Chelsea game, Jamie Rubin on social media has had an interesting exchange with NUFC 360, who'd said, could you make it 2 free drinks on Sunday, laughing face, not fancy joints in the Gallagher? To which Jamie Rubin has replied with a thinking face, that's an interesting idea. Now, this has been floated to me by someone inside the club.
Why not make it 9
so
free drinks?
I don't know whether this is actually something which is going to happen, but I think it is actually being talked about inside the club as to whether they do something like that. I mean, regardless, it's different in terms of it's 4 hours later than the kickoff of that game. People will have enjoyed themselves, I'm sure, in the centre of Newcastle before that game. I have absolutely no doubt, regardless, that this will be a raucous atmosphere. And in some way, what is important about that, though, is that Newcastle, as a fan base and as a team, have seemingly learned how to channel that, usually for the better, at St James's Park as well. And that is what is important this weekend, because it's not just about being up for it, it's also then making sure that means Newcastle start quickly. They do put Everton under pressure, but then they don't panic as well. And it's interesting that they could, I believe, if they win this weekend, then Newcastle can equal their most ever home wins across the course of a Premier League campaign. Wow. I think it'll be 13 of 19. Honestly, this equal the most since 2003, which would be 13 of 19. And so that St James's Park, despite a couple of dodgy results here and there, including even since the turn of the year, is somewhere Newcastle United have been very, very strong, and hopefully that continues on Sunday.
And we know that War Flags have got big plans for the match, as you know, they always bring it in these big moments. Yeah, it just needs to be team and crowd in harmony, and you know, but you know, I don't have fears about the team. I just don't. I mean, it's like they rise to these occasions now, as Jacob talked about in that in that interview, it's like they're used to these big game moments. And so, yeah, this is another big one.
And hopefully Everton will be a bit emotionally depleted after that Goodison Park send-off that George mentioned earlier. And our resident Evertonian declined the invitation to come on the show today, choosing instead...
He's fled the country, I think, hasn't he? He's actually fled the country to make sure he didn't have to be on the podcast.
Took his passport and he buggered off. And instead, he's chosen to send a cowardly voice note.
Hello, Podomatine. I am walking back from Goodison Park. The final game at Goodison Park after Everton 2, Southampton 0. I'm sorry I can't be on the podcast this week, but I am ready for Everton Newcastle. I'm not running scared. I've been busy chanting Jordan Pickford's name. And, let's see what happens. If Newcastle need points, let's just sort of set up in the dirtiest low block possible. Five at the back, Pickford in goal, and see what happens. Anyway, see you next week. Have a good one. Ta-ra.
Oh, doesn't it make you feel sick listening to that?
Sickening. Absolutely sickening. Yeah.
Rotten.
Yeah. Yeah.
This would, of course, form part of a nightmare scenario for Newcastle United fans. Sunderland at Wembley the day before, and then along comes Jordan Pickford to save a penalty or some such. Then along comes Jacob Whitehead to be massively annoying. So, that's the dark end of the spectrum, isn't it? That's the wrong end of the scale. We don't want to be anywhere near that. But hopefully things will be a lot brighter.
We've seen Jordan Pickford come to Newcastle before and have a blinder. He's a really good keeper. He would love nothing more than to do that again, of course. Personally, I would love Sunderland to be back in the Premier League because I just think it would be fantastic. But I know that view is not shared by all of our listeners at all.
It's not shared by everybody on this podcast, to be perfectly honest with you.
No, that's fine. But I think this is the old Newcastle talking, isn't it? You know, painting those catastrophic scenarios.
Pickford has been to St. James's Park and lost his head before as well.
Yeah. I think the lesson that I hope I haven't learned this lesson too soon, as it were, but I think the lesson I've learned from this season is that just when you're at the point of kind of underestimating the team or overestimating the danger, the peril, it's like, you know, the new Newcastle comes along, steamrollers that sort of fear and gets the job done. It would be surprising at this point, I think, if the team didn't get the job done. Whatever happens, it's been an amazing, wonderful, transformative season. But with one sort of big last task in front of them, I'd back them to do it.
Yes, absolutely. A shout out as well, just before we go, to another Big Dan, this time in Hamilton, Ontario, who emailed us after the Carabao Cup final. His other love, the Toronto Maple Leafs, lost a deciding seventh game against the Florida Panthers and have been eliminated from the playoffs. Next year, Dan, next year. There's always next year. Right then, that's just about it. Thank you very much, chaps, for your time. Cheers, George.
Yes, look forward to the match this weekend. I think we're all going to try and get together, aren't we, and do something a bit different. Do something a bit different for this game, which will be nice.
I don't want to put a dampener on things, but I believe I'm sitting in your seat on Sunday. And the last time I sat in your seat, Newcastle got knocked out at the Champions League. Maybe rethink this.
There would be a poetic.
There's going to be like a catharsis, isn't there? There's like a that's what we need.
Of them getting back there. Other than getting back.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, George very graciously, which is unlike him, didn't mention the fact that we are probably the podcast next week, in all likelihood, is going to almost be like living and breathing the day, which George had been pushing for quite a few weeks, and I kept telling them that I didn't think that it would go down to the final day, so that we might be wasting our time doing that. So, he can be a little bit smug now about the fact that he called us.
Well, I can be smug after the event, depending on what happens. But yeah, I just think that's a nice way of celebrating this season and, you know, celebrating a final day where something good is at stake, which is still, you know, is still a rarity in these parts, isn't it?
Yes, whatever happens next week's episode should be a doozy, definitely. If you're at the game or you're watching the game and you want to send us a voice note of how you're feeling on the day, as the goals go in, as things change, as things solidify, get in touch with us and send over a voice note. Right, podonthetine@theathletic.com if you've got anything you want to say or ask. And that's just about it, chaps. Thank you very much to all of you out there for listening as well. And we'll be back next week. Take care. Have a good week. Goodbye.
Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.